Today I'd like to talk about the 10 Upakilesa. This is something which meditators must keep in mind when they first undertake to practice along the path of Vipassana. For people who have practiced Samatha meditation, or meditation which is simply for the purpose of calming the mind, meditation which is simply for making the mind focused and fixed, and not for the purpose of continuing on to insight. Some people have spent a lot of time attaining states of strong concentration. These people are much more likely to experience very intense states of what we call the upakilesa. The upakilesa, the way they talk about it, is something good which blocks goodness. At the time when the meditator has reached what they call the fourth stage of insight knowledge, for a new meditator, this is often the fourth or the fifth day. For the first time, the meditator will generally experience some good things. There are good things which block one from attaining goodness, stop one from attaining goodness, means greater good. These are things which are, they're called kusala, they're called wholesomeness. They're good things. They're things which lead to happiness, lead to peace in the here and now. But they're called upakilesa because they can create a barrier, a block, or can become a hindrance in the practice of Vipassana meditation. When many good things arise, the meditator becomes attached, or stuck on these nice things which have arisen, and loses their interest or gives up their practice of seeing the impermanence of these phenomena. When the meditator gives up the mind, gives up the meditation object, and instead dwells in their enjoyment of these good states, the practice of insight is inhibited. The meditator's progress is inhibited. One is not able to reach the higher stages of knowledge, the fifth, the sixth, and so on, because the mind still has attachment. And so altogether, the upakilesa are something which meditators have to watch out for, not to be afraid of, but to keep an eye out for, and to use as a sign, a reason to reflect in one's mind whether one is enjoying, attached to, looking for, seeking out these good states, these nice meditation states. Altogether in the ancient text there are 10. You could branch it out and say there are many more, but they generally come under 10 headings. These are all of the good things which can come, which are not really in the end of the highest value. They're good things, but only in a worldly sense. They can't lead one to freedom from suffering by themselves. And if one becomes attached to them, they can be actually become a hindrance. So the first one is opasa, or illumination, they say. And this is an easy explanation is bright lights, or any sort of brightness that arises in the mind. When one sees bright lights or colors or pictures, sometimes like a movie, sometimes like a kaleidoscope, sometimes like a bright flash of lasting bright light or color. There are many kinds of imagery we can call upasa. They all come under the heading of what we call illumination. And so if we're truly practicing vipassana, it shouldn't come as a surprise that this is not what we're aiming for. But for people who have begun to practice, they often are looking for such things. Or if they've heard other people practicing other types of meditation talk about these things, they might be seeking them out. And when they arise, the meditator becomes pleased by them, becomes attached to them, comes to enjoy them, comes to feel comfortable with them. And when they're not there, the meditator might feel agitated and upset. It makes it difficult for one to look at reality objectively, because one is always trying to practice in such a way that these phenomena arise. And is not able to open oneself up to the full spectrum of bad things as well, and unpleasant things as well. Be able to deal with unpleasant situations. The upasa is the first one, and we acknowledge this one as seeing. As it's one of the senses, the Buddha said, when seeing, he knows I am seeing. So we say to ourselves, seeing, 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 and we make this clear awareness in our mind, I am seeing. I'm not emphasizing the I, emphasizing the seeing. And in English we don't have to use the I. In Pali it's necessary to conjugate the verb that means I am seeing, but the emphasis is not on the I. So we simply say in English, seeing, seeing. And we say seeing, seeing until the sight goes away. We're reminding ourselves. Sati means reminding. We're reminding ourselves all the time that this is only seeing. It's not a bright light. It's not a color. It's not this. It's not that. All of these things arise in the mind. It's actually just seeing. It's light and the eye and the mind. When we acknowledge in this way, we have no attachment, no. We take no comfort or satisfaction in this object, and we continue on with our meditation. We see that it also is something which is arising and ceasing. We see it as not me, as not mine, as not under my control. This is the first one. The second one, piti is rapture. Rapture, there are, in the text, there are five kinds of rapture. You want to sort it out however you might. It means anything where the mind becomes so full of ecstasy or concentration, the mind becomes overfull and starts to spill out like the charge or like a full glass of water. When you fill the glass up with water, if you keep pouring, it starts to pour over. So piti is this pouring over, this outpouring of rapture, and it comes in different ways. If it comes in just a little flashes, sometimes it can come just in one flash, where suddenly the meditator feels like a shock, or where the meditator feels goose flesh just for an instant. It can come in the form of light, where the meditator feels very light. Suddenly there's this like static electricity, and the meditator feels like they're going to float, they're charged and going to float off the ground. Some people feel like they're actually floating. Some people apparently actually do float. I'll leave it up to you to see which it is. Sometimes it comes in waves, like goose flesh in waves, or laughter, or crying. Many people cry for hours and don't know the reason. Sometimes it comes very subtly, sublimely. Sometimes the body is shaking, rocking back and forth. Many different ways. This is called rapture, but there are many ways of acknowledging. You could just say to yourself rapture, rapture, but it's not very specific. It's important that you know that this is what we call piti or rapture. Know how, why it arises, and how use the word rapture to understand it. But when you acknowledge, you acknowledge according to the existential phenomenon, the realities which are there. When you're swaying, you say to yourself, swaying. When you're floating, you say to yourself, floating, or light. When you cry, say crying. When you laugh, laughing. If you yawn, some people yawn, you say yawning. When you feel goose flesh, you can say feeling or so on. We have to acknowledge, when we acknowledge in this way, the mind won't attach to the sensations. Again, these things are not bad, and we're not trying to, of course, make them go away. We're trying to shake the attachment which will arise. Cut away the attachment so that there's a clean contact. When the mind contacts the object, it's like when you have electricity, you need a clean contact or else you get sparks and you get all sorts of undesired electrical short circuits. But when you have a clean contact, like when the mind is only knowing this is seeing, this is hearing, and so on, this is feeling, then there arises no attachment, no rust, no sparks. This is the second, is called iti. Number three, and I'm probably not going in the right order here, but I'll get through 10 of them, I hope. Basati is quietude. Or tranquility, they say. It's when the mind is something like the mind stops. The activity, the busyness in the mind just suddenly stops or slowly stops. Maybe even the rising and the falling of the abdomen is not clear. And there's nothing to acknowledge. And meditators will often come and say, "Oh, Ajahn, there's nothing to acknowledge. I have no meditation object. What am I to do?" It's all quiet. It's silent. I just feel quiet. Well, then your teacher's job is very easy. They put the words back in the meditator's face. Say quiet. As long as there's consciousness there, there's something that the object, the consciousness is taking something as an object. When we feel quiet, it's taking quiet as an object. But so if we are not mindful, quiet, the mind will become attached to it, and become comfortable in it, and we start become addicted to it, always seeking out and wanting for it. Of course, there's nothing wrong with being quiet, and it doesn't mean that your meditation has to stop. But because meditators feel like their meditation objects have disappeared, then they do stop acknowledging and they just enjoy the calm. When you feel calm, it's necessary for the meditator to create a clear thought, saying calm. When one feels quiet, say quiet. This is number three, pasati. Jnana is number four. Means knowledge. So when the meditator reaches, say, the fourth stage of knowledge, their mind starts to become very sharp. And they're able to see impermanence, they're able to see suffering, they're able to see non-self. They're able to see all of the Buddha's teachings. If they studied the Buddha's teachings, suddenly it all becomes clear to them. All of the Buddha's teaching becomes very clear, and they're able to understand and think about the Vinaya, the Sutta, Abhidhamma, everything is clear in their minds. If they've never studied the Buddha's teaching, then they start thinking about other things, thinking about problems in their life, how to solve these problems. Suddenly they can solve all their problems. Family problems, situations at home, suddenly they start thinking. Or if they're scholars in this or that subject, suddenly they'll start working out all of these different problems. Mathematicians will suddenly have all these math problems they're just working out in their heads. Physicists suddenly have all these physics problems, and so on. Writers suddenly write a book in their head. There arises jnana, is knowledge. All of this knowledge is only lokiya. For those who see impermanent suffering and non-self, if they're versed in the Buddha's teaching, they often at this point think to themselves that they've become enlightened. because of their knowledge. This is something important for meditators to understand. Many of these upakilesa, when they arise, cause the meditator who is new at the practice of insight to think to themselves that because of these things, when they see bright lights, they think they're enlightened. This happened even to a great teacher in the central Thailand. And he would have his students focus on a light and focus on a bright light, and they send it through the body, and in this way they come to see all these shapes, Buddha images, and when they see a Buddha image they think they're enlightened. And he was a very famous teacher. He's still very famous even though he's long passed away. And he went to Wat Mahathat to study Vipassana. Why he went is not clear. It seems like it was a nice gesture on his part that he should, as a great teacher, as a famous teacher, go to see another meditation center. Could have been because Wat Mahathat had become very famous and this idea of Vipassana was something that he had never studied. So he went to Wat Mahathat to see their practice, and he explained to his teacher how he saw this light. And of course he took it to mean that he was enlightened, mean that he had reached enlightenment. And his teacher said, "Oh, very good, very good. This is an important trick for a teacher, is that it's very important that when these things arise, you don't say, 'Oh no, you better be careful, those are upakilesa,' and get the meditator all worried. 'Oh, piti, you have rapture, you're shaking. Oh, it's very dangerous.' I've heard people say this. It's very dangerous, you have to be careful. You make the meditator paranoid. Of course, these things are not dangerous. They're dangerous if you become paranoid and crazy about them. Just like anything, when you become paranoid and crazy, you go crazy. Meditators especially, if a meditator becomes paranoid and their teacher encourages them to become paranoid, this can be very dangerous. It's important that we encourage the meditators. And say that when things are good, say it's good. Because the meditator feels that it's good, they feel good about it. So you're not saying anything wrong when you say this is a good thing. Upakilesa, a good thing. "Oh, very good," he said. He said, "Rumpa," talking to him, because he was an old, very senior monk, he said, "Rumpa, you have to say to yourself, 'Seeing, seeing, seeing.'" And so he went away. And he came back the next day and he said, "Oh, now I see monks," he said. "So I see a room full of monks." And he somehow thought that this was connected with his enlightenment. But what's happening is his very concentrated sphere of light, which he had been focusing on for so many years, was starting to break up, breaking into this image or that image. So he was still holding on, even though his imagery was changing. And when he saw these monks, he said, "Oh, very good, very good. You say seeing?" He said, "Yes, yes." Now, so you keep saying to yourself, "Seeing, seeing, seeing." The next day he came back and he was shaking. And he said to his teacher, I have no hope, I have no refuge. He said, "I'm old now, and very shortly I'm going to die, and I've gotten nothing." He said, when he said seeing, 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 what he thought was permanent, this bright light which was permanent, disappeared. And when it disappeared, he became shocked. Like he couldn't find his refuge anymore. This thing which he could depend upon, which he had worked and worked and worked, as soon as he stopped working, it disappeared. And he slipped through to the higher stages of knowledge, seeing Pankayana, Payayana, Atinavayana very quickly. So he was able to say to his teacher, he felt like he had no refuge. These things which he thought was permanent are impermanent. It leads to Pankayana, cessation, Payayana, danger. Seeing these things are no refuge. These things which we are holding on to are like sand, are like water in our hand, slipping through our hands. Or something like ice. When it's whole, it feels something that you can hold on to, but as you hold it, it turns into water and disappears. And so it's important that when any of these things arise, that we are very clear with ourselves that these things are not the state which we are trying to attain. And anyway, this which I was talking about was jnana. This is another one which we have to be careful about. If your knowledge is simply thinking, considering mentally, this is an insight knowledge. Insight knowledge is something which comes in a flash, and it's a realization, like a aha, like a oh, like a shock or a waking up, or hearing or seeing something, like when you see a golden treasure, or you see a snake. There's the story of the man who caught a fish in his hand. When he pulled it out of the water, he saw it was a snake. At the moment he saw it was a snake, he let go. Insight knowledge comes like this. You know like you see. This is why the Buddha said knowing and seeing, because you know like you see. When you know, it's like, oh my God, it's a snake. What you thought was you is not you. What you thought was a fish is a snake. Let it go. Jnana, number four, no? Number five, we have Pakaha. Pakaha is Pakaha means Wiriya. Pakaha means effort. Some meditators have great effort and they can practice all day, all night, all day, all night. They feel like they could go practice forever. And as long as the energy lasts, I had one meditator who went running around the monastery. She just couldn't sit still. She suddenly had all this energy and she went walking, 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 walking. She even said to herself, and all the people at, this was at Doi Sutheb, which is a very tourist destination. So all the tourists watching this crazy woman walk, walk, walking, walking, walking around the monastery in the middle of the day with hundreds of people. Must have thought it was a little bit strange. And this is another thing to watch out for. In the end, sometimes the meditators who have this experience will overestimate themselves and will push themselves too hard in the beginning, and then in the later stages they're unable to practice, they have to take a break, or they find it hard to continue, and they get set back because they get caught up in their energy. I've heard of many stories of monks who think they became enlightened because suddenly they're not tired, practicing all day, all night, no liking, disliking, no delusion. Not delusion still, but delusion is very hard to see. So if you don't see it, you think you're enlightened. Simply because of energy. And be careful. It's a sign of progress when the meditator feels energy, but it can simply just be a sign of strong concentration or fixed concentration. And it's temporary. It's not something which lasts. When we feel effort, we have to say to ourselves, energy, energy, or feeling. Agitated, restless. It's important to note all of these as well. There's, again, nothing wrong when this arises, and we're not we shouldn't be upset when it arises, but we should not either be attached to it. Number five. Number six, adhimokkha. Adhimokkha is another word for confidence. It means the meditators sure, completely sure about the meditation practice. Many meditators at this point will tell the teacher they want to become a monk or a nun. They start thinking about their family and thinking about how all their family members have to come and practice this, because this is the way. It's a sign that the meditator has realized something, but the problem with all of these things is with confidence or with any of these things, that the meditator then takes this to mean that they've become enlightened. Confidence is a big one. The meditator has great confidence. They, even though they might not think I'm enlightened, they tend to become lax. This is how our mind works. When we're worried, when we come here, we're all stressed and worried, and we've seen so much suffering that it pushes us, and we're so scared that we should have to go back and face all of that suffering. We should have to go back and yell at people and have people yell at us and not be able to deal with it. That when confidence arises and we feel like we've gained something, all of that impulse to practice or impetus to practice melts away. And it can be very hard at that point to find impetus, find reason to practice. And the meditator often becomes lax at that point. So fear and worry and all of these things which sometimes bring us stress, which bring us to practice, can be helpful in the beginning, but in the end it has to go beyond that. It has to come to become wisdom, to see that the life which we led is simply not desirable. And have the same feeling or the same understanding but a different feeling, so that we're no longer stressed or scared or worried about going back. We just don't see the point. We don't wish to go back to that way. We see the danger, but we don't get upset about the danger. And so when confidence arises, it doesn't change our practice. It doesn't stop us from practicing. You have to be careful when this arises that you're still continuing. Okay, so you're confident and you're sure of yourself, but are you continuing? The Lord Buddha said, even the Anagami, this group of Anagami meditators, they had gotten so far, so they almost perfectly enlightened, almost free from defilements. And the Lord Buddha came and told them they were all being negligent because they'd stopped practicing. And so they all continued and became arahant. This is saddha, or we call adimokha. The third one is upatthana. Upatthana. Upatthana means establishing. In this case, it means it's another word for mindfulness. So at this point, the meditator feels like they're truly mindful. Everything that comes, they're able to grasp it. They're able to grab everything. Everything that comes arises, ceases. And the mind is able to be to grasp everything. And this even goes for things in the future, in the past. If the meditator starts thinking about the past, they're able to remember. Then this happened, this is this. In the future, thinking this. There arises the ability to remember and to remember things we have to do in the future and so on. But even in the present moment, it can arise that our mindfulness is very sharp and we're able to catch everything. And this is a good thing, there's nothing wrong, but when the meditator becomes attached to this and starts to feel like, yeah, I'm really mindful. When they start to think like this, then they stop being mindful. And they start getting lax and feeling like, I've come. Many people, when they reach this stage, they say, I've got what I came for. And if their impulse for coming is not strong enough, they'll go right back to their lives. At Uttayapayayana, the fourth stage of knowledge, they'll often leave feeling like they've gotten what they came for. And truly, they have gotten what they came for, but the problem is they didn't come for enough. And when they go back, they'll have to fall back into suffering. It's not sure where they will go. They might fall into evil states and become bad people, because their minds are still not clear. They might fall into bad companionship. They might fall into great suffering, not being able to deal with that great suffering. This is seven. Then we have upekha. The meditator feels calm and feels neutral. The meditator feels neutral towards everything. Whereas before, in the third stage of knowledge or lower, meditator was agitated and sometimes very upset about the pain and the aching and the bad things which arise. When they reach this stage, the mind becomes very peaceful. And the mind is not agitated. Everything which arises simply passes away. And the meditator is not upset by that. Because this knowledge is still weak, it is still a bit concentration-based and not completely insight-based, the meditator is still not able to let go. The meditator feels themselves enjoying or satisfied by this equanimity. And they like this state. And because they like this state, they will attach to it. When they attach to it, then they won't be able to be mindful, calm, and same as with basati. Number nine is happiness. And the meditator feels great happiness arise. They will become attached to this. And they will stop acknowledging. And the tenth one is simply the attachment itself. it's included here as being a base for the other nine. So the other nine become upakilesa, become defilements of insight or hindrances, imperfections of insight, because of this tenth one, nikanti, the attachment. We have attachment to any of the other nine, or even attachment to anything that arises at the six senses, that we see, we hear, we smell, we taste. When these things arise, when there is nikanti, when there is the attachment to them, they become upakilesa. So it's important for meditators to watch out for these things, the good things which block us from goodness, which block goodness. They're good things which have the effect of hindering the meditator's practice, because the meditator becomes attached and, we say, partial to these things. And of course, vipassana is the practice of becoming impartial, so that we can come to judge things as though we're judging cases. We judge fairly. We judge people fairly. We judge situations fairly. We judge phenomena fairly and justly, according and objectively, according to their nature. So this is something which meditators, it's very important for meditators, especially ones going on to practice advanced practice, should be aware of. So for this reason, they've chosen this topic for today's Dhamma. And that's all for today.